Hey, empowered leaders, before we dive into today's episode, I want to remind you that we're eager to tackle your questions and curiosities about this season's topics. Our special question and response episode is just around the corner, and the deadline to submit your questions is fast approaching. Make sure to send them in by Friday, March 22nd. Whether it's something you'd like us to explore further or clarify, or if you have any challenges or questions about our discussions, we're here for it. Please email your thoughts to theoverflowinglifepodcast@gmail.com. That is theoverflowinglifepodcast@gmail.com. Or you can go on Instagram and message us there. Your input truly enriches what we're doing, and we can't wait to hear from you. Now, on with the show.
Hopefully this will convince you I really do need to do this. So there was a study done by Green Peak Partners in Cornell. I think it was around 75 CEOs. And what they looked at was what caused a CEO to be successful. One of the biggest factors was self-awareness.
Welcome, friends, to our latest episode of the Overflowing Life podcast, where we navigate the crossroads of modern leadership, authentic living, and the redemptive power of business. I'm your host, Chris Lagarde. This week, we explore a cornerstone of effective leadership, self-awareness. In this conversation, we will unpack what self-awareness actually is, explore its profound impact on the effectiveness of a leader, and conclude with actionable steps to cultivate this essential skill. Get ready for an enlightening conversation that could prove to be a game changer for your leadership journey.
Hello, and welcome back to the Overflowing Life podcast, where we dive into the topics that are really challenging leaders these days in a very fast-paced world, and really helping them to live that full, authentic life. And today, we've got the topic of self-awareness on our plate. And I just want to, we talked about identity last time, right? And we want to touch on the difference between identity and self-awareness. And so, Adrian, let me say what I think identity is, and I'd love to hear what you feel self-awareness is, right? Kind of define that. So identity is who am I at my core intrinsically that doesn't really, you're learning more about it, but it doesn't drastically change necessarily over your lifetime once you get things settled in, but it's who you are at your core. It's not the team you play for, but it's like, what are those traits that make you you? And I shared even what I believe my identity to be. So what would you say self-awareness is? What's the difference between that and identity?
I think self-awareness is having the awareness of how we show up and how we're impacting other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And in order to understand how you're impacting other people, it's got to be like, I kind of think about it as like internal and external awareness, right? You've got self-awareness on the inside, what's going on inside, but then how is that showing up on the outside? And, I've kind of thought about self. Another way to say self-awareness would be self-mastery. Like, how are you mastering yourself? And as you are developing your self-awareness, you kind of master who you are a little bit more.
Right, right. It's also being aware of what's going on your inside. When you can recognize and name the emotions, the reactions that you're having, when you can manage that and know how to control it, depending on the situation, being aware of how your emotions are playing out. So you said self-mastery. I also think about emotional intelligence. And so I would ask you, Chris, what would you say is the difference, or is there a difference between self-mastery and emotional intelligence?
Yeah, I would. I think they're kind of like peanut butter and jelly. They kind of go hand in hand. Emotional intelligence is essentially the ability to recognize and regulate your own emotions as well as understand the emotions of others. That's very simplified, right? And yet, and I think it's crucial, a crucial component to that, right? If you think about the peanut butter and jelly, self-awareness plays into that emotional intelligence. And without a strong sense of self-awareness, it's really difficult to understand what your emotions and behaviors are, much less recognize that in somebody else. And so that self-awareness plays a really big foundation in emotional intelligence, right? And again, what comes first? They kind of go hand in hand. They mix together a little bit.
Yeah, they kind of do. And I also think about this really cool tool called Johari's Window. And we can probably find some resources to link to that on the website, but it's essentially a quadrants. and the quadrants go through what you know about yourself that others know about you, what you don't know about yourself, what other people know about you that you don't know about yourself. Huh. And there's another one that I'm forgetting, but the one that you want to focus on or can focus on is really, what is it that people know about me that are observing about me that I don't know about myself? And I think that people who lack self-awareness, they're kind of stuck in that place. And if they don't understand how they are showing up, if they don't understand the impact that they're having on the people mm-hmm. around them, you know, you have someone that walks into the room, or you have a leader who walks into the room and they're on their phone the entire time and they're disengaged and they're dismissing people, but they think they're the greatest thing since sliced bread, going on the peanut butter and jelly metaphor. But then everybody around them is like, who is this person? And they are not being professional. They are not distributing great leadership qualities. That's kind of that quadrant of being unaware, maybe even a little delusional about yourself and how you're showing up. And I think it all fundamentally boils down to self-awareness.
So there was an organization I was involved in for a while that really focused on men. It was a ministry that focused on men. And they talked about if you picture a cup, and if your cup is 100% filled with anger and you move or shake at all, it's going to spill everywhere. Right. And I think that's a great picture. A part of emotional intelligence and self-awareness is like, hey, where are you? In fact, in our house, we use the term, don't spill your anger out on other people, or understand your emotional wake. When you come into a room, and I love you eights, and I'm going to pick on you a second, you tend to have big emotions, right? And Enneagram eights tend to have big emotions, and they're not aware of it. Sometimes they have no idea. And it's like, they leave this huge emotional wake after them that, you know, and it's not just eights, right? I know I do that as well. I've learned the hard way. It leave this huge emotional wake, and people are like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And the person has no idea that that happened. That is a lack of self-awareness and a lack of emotional intelligence all at the same time.
Right. And so then what happens when you have that awareness? What do you do about it? Because I think especially when we relate it back to our Enneagram type, we're so stuck in the rut of our personality types. If we haven't done the work yet, if we haven't been on the path of growth and transformation, so we have this information now. What do we do about it? Can people actually change and respond differently to their triggers?
Yes. Because from personal experience, and I'm sure you can say the same thing, absolutely. And it's like the you know, Carol Dweck, who wrote the book Growth Mindset. You know, it's either a fixed mindset or a growth mindset. I firmly believe that growth mindset is 100% accurate and true. And it's a shame when people get stuck in that fixed mindset where they don't believe they can change and grow. And it's like, oh, it's like a victim mentality. Oh, well, I'm never going to change. This is the way that I am.
That's just how I am, right? Yep.
And I can't stand it when people say, oh, that's just how I am. Because the truth is like, no. You have a choice. If you're aware of that and you understand how you show up that way, and ask yourself, is this serving me? And if it's not, what do you want to do with that? Do you want to continue to show up that way? And you don't have to be stuck in that. You're not stuck in that. And so it's really important to have that growth mindset and understand you can change, you can make different choices. And it's once you are aware, once you create that awareness, now you have the responsibility to make a choice, right? And it's that awareness choice.
Right? Change is hard. I think changing as humans is difficult. And so I've been exploring the Enneagram for 4 or 5 years now. I know what my triggers are. I know what my vices are. And yet I still default to them sometimes. I can still be super defensive. I can still be super judgy. Now, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I wouldn't have been aware quite to the degree that I was doing that or to the impact that it was having on others. But even now, as I've grown towards a little bit of a higher degree of health and wholeness, it's sometimes really hard to make that choice because my knee-jerk reaction is, oh, but I want to be right about this.
I heard it described this way once, that somebody had visited, one of my clients had visited Alaska, and it was during their summertime. And on the side of the road, apparently there are signs that said, mind your rut or watch the rut. And the idea there is like, once you get in that in the winter, you're going to be in it for miles. And it's the same thing with our minds, right? When we're early childhood, adolescence, and during traumatic events, these ruts get worn into our brains, and we subconsciously just act in them, and just that's the track we go on. And to rewire the brain and re-rut the brain takes time and intention. And without that awareness and the decision to say, okay, I'm going to be aware, that takes courage in and of itself. And then to work on it, admit it, and rewire the brain takes a lot of time. So, you know, it's like the older we get, you know, the more set in our ways we are. That's very true. And so, but an old dog can learn new tricks. So you just have to be aware of the choice and be committed to the work.
To kind of tie that up, I wanted to say that when we were in our Enneagram training, Chris, one of the most impactful things that our facilitator said, and it was like within the last hour of this week-long training, was just focus on 15% improvement. Right. And as an Enneagram type one, as someone who very much identifies as a recovering perfectionist, I want 100% all the time. But when she said just focus on 15% improvement, that has really stuck with me. And I think as we continue on this journey of growth, self-awareness, transformation, leadership development, if you can just focus on 15% improvement, 15% better every time, eventually that's going to add up. And over time, you'll really start to change some of those patterns in your thinking.
So I'm going to pretend that I have a leader in front of me that's like, dude, I don't need to worry about that stuff. I'm a great leader and I don't need to be self-aware. It's not that important. So let me just give you a little bit of information. Hopefully this will convince you to be like, oh crap, I really do need to do this. So first of all, there was a study done by Green Peak Partners in Cornell. I think it was around 72 or 75 CEOs. And you know, I'll link to that in the show notes. And what they looked at was what caused a CEO to be successful. And one of the biggest factors was self-awareness, right? Being aware of how they show up, their shortcomings, their false self, their ego, and their essence, and all those kind of things. That was a huge factor. In addition, in March 7th of this year, 2023, there was an article published entitled, "I was VP at Google for 10 years. Here's the number one skill I looked for at job interviews." Very few people had it, and it was self-awareness. Also, the Journal of Applied Leadership and Management has an article on, or a study on, the impact of self-awareness on leadership behavior. And what it said was few empirical studies exist on the relationship between self-awareness and leadership, but existing ones highlight its significance and influence. And it also goes on to say, to enhance emotional intelligence and self-awareness, leadership practice, mindfulness, seek feedback, get mentoring, and employ journaling, which some of those we have already talked about.
I love that there is so much research that supports the idea of leadership and self-awareness. So everything you shared is magnificent and all very cerebral too. So if we were to boil it down into the practical and day-to-day, Chris, tell us about a time maybe when you worked with somebody who lacks self-awareness, or you've coached a leader, or you yourself have been in a position. What is the impact when leaders lack self-awareness? What has your experience been?
Well, I just because I don't want to get in trouble, I think I will share my story, in that there's plenty of times where you know, I had an admin that worked for me, and she was amazing. She was a 9 and just amazing. And at some point she was able to be honest enough with me to say, look, I don't know if you realize it, but man, I can tell very easily when you're stressed out because you just get into dictator mode. And I'm like, ooh, I don't like that. I don't want to be a dictator. I don't want to be a jerk. Right? There's a word in dictator that I'm not going to parse out there, but it's clearly there and I don't want to be that. And so, you know, that's just a very, you know, easy, short example of that. But, you know, it's that does not create good experiences. And you know, your clients, your family, your friends, your coworkers, the people you lead, if you are not aware of how you show up in a negative way when you're stressed or triggered, it's going to be hard to lead people. People are not going to follow you. They're not going to want to follow you because they're going to think you're a jerk or a dictator.
well, it doesn't cultivate the relationship and it doesn't cultivate trust. And I don't think you can be an effective leader if you don't have trust established.
Sit tight for a special announcement. Hey, Empowered Leaders. This is your host, Chris Lagarde. Today, I've got something incredibly special for you. If you've been following our journey this season, you know we've explored the transformative path from feeling trapped and lost to discovering a life filled with abundance and excitement. And as you probably know, that is my personal journey over the last few years. It's been an enlightening journey, and I'm thrilled to share the next step with you. I'm launching an exclusive online facilitated experience called Empowering the Soul. This program is crafted to dive deeper into the breakout concepts we've covered this season. So, imagine a space where you're vividly empowered to reclaim your soul from the edges of burnout and confusion, a sanctuary where you can align your life with your most profound values and dreams, all within a community that supports each other and grows together. Your transformative journey begins this April, spanning 9 sessions over 3 months. And here's the exciting part. As one of the select 8 pioneers in this inaugural group, you will grab your chance to explore these life-changing concepts more intimately and help shape this experience for future participants. The value packed into this course is over $2,000, covering everything from personalized coaching to exclusive resources. But for you, my podcast family, as a part of this initial group, I'm offering this for just $60 a session or $165 a month. Seize this opportunity now. Feel the growth, the alignment, and the fulfillment at a fraction of the cost. So, when you're ready to be one of these impactful eights, stepping into this journey with me, diving deep into reclaiming your life, simply email me at theoverflowinglifepodcast@gmail.com, all one word. Again, theoverflowinglifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can direct message me on Instagram @theoverflowinglife. Don't wait. Slots will fill up fast. There's only 8, and I can't wait to embark on this journey with you. I'm in. Are you? Now back to the show.
Also, as a leader, it's your responsibility to help your people develop self-awareness and to help them understand the impact that they are having on the people around them. Both really positive performers, because your high performers need to hear what they are doing well, but also your lower performers or your B players, they need to know what's getting, you know, what the impact is of them maybe not being the best they can be or having a negative impact. So as a leader, you have to be committed to calling that out, doing it with love, doing it in a way that is going to be from a growth mindset and with compassion. So that, and the other thing I want to say about that is you had mentioned feedback. And as we talked about the Johari's window earlier, how do you get to know those things that other people see that you don't know about yourself? And I think as a leader, what I have experienced is that feedback goes both ways. And so when I am meeting with my staff members, and if I'm offering them some feedback or some coaching or some constructive criticism, many times a year, I give them an opportunity to give me feedback too. I ask for it regularly. Most of the time, they don't have too many constructive things to say, right? Whether they're being polite or things are going fine. But I did have one person a couple years ago say something along the lines of, you know, I really wish you would be a little bit more bold and direct when you're talking to your supervisors about our unit. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So I really had to think about that and reflect on that and figure out what was the impact of me not being bold? What was that having on my staff? But then also, it's been a growing edge for me too. And so, you know, I'm not a boat rocker. I am somebody who is a rule follower. I want to make sure that things are tied up and done the way that they are supposed to be done, but at the expense sometimes of not advocating loudly enough for the things that my team needs. And so since getting that feedback, again, that was something I didn't realize about myself. It's really stuck with me, and I have had to kind of step into that and be a little bit more bold in that area. And that wouldn't have come if I hadn't have asked for feedback.
I want to ask you, you and I have both been on, you know, learning about the Enneagram for about the same time, about 4 or 5 years, 4 to 5 years. As you've used that tool to be more self-aware at work specifically, how has that made you a better leader? Where has that shown up for you?
Well, I have a tendency to have unreasonably high standards for myself and for others. And so it's actually helped me to kind of chill out a little bit, to realize that this is the lens through which I see things and it's not how everybody else sees it. And so for my personal journey, it's been having reasonable standards. And if my people are not performing or meeting those standards, to have really direct conversations. It's also helped me understand that I can shy away from direct conversations sometimes. And so I've really had to be a little bit more bold in that and step into that. But it's also given me confidence in knowing who I am as a leader, right? I am somebody with really high ethical standards, a lot of integrity. I'm a very caring and compassionate leader. I like to know how my humans are doing first as humans. And so through the Enneagram, knowing both those kind of shadow sides of how I can show up, but then also it's helped to affirm the things that that do make me a good leader. And so I've been able to really embrace that and focus on that as how I show up as a leader.
That's really insightful. And I'll share that, you know, so as an Enneagram 5 or the observer, you know, my fixation or vice is like stinginess, essentially, is kind of how I would say it. Like I have fives tend to have the lowest battery life of any types. And so if I'm with people or interacting with people, I tend to like really withhold, you know, a lot of emotion, a lot of myself, so that I can make it through the day. And the virtue of that is non-attachment, right? Getting to the point where it's like, hey, I've got unlimited battery and I don't need to hold on to all these things. I can give it away. I can be available for people. And the non-attachment allows me to operate really well in emotional and crisis type situations where I'm not emotionally attached to things. I can be very detached when in a healthy way and make great decisions. Another thing that I will say that it's taught me is that, so, you know, not to get too deep, but my action center is a 9, which is the peacemaker. So I avoid conflict. And when I understood that I had a very strong 9 part of me, I was like, holy cow, that explains a lot. And so the virtue of the 9 is to get into right action. And so I've recognized just recently, I was reflecting on this today, actually, how in my life, where I've been getting into right action, where I wasn't. And so when I know that if I'm kind of withdrawing and not taking action on things, it doesn't mean I have to take action, right? We talked about surrender earlier, but you know, I've got to know when, okay, now it's time to take the right action and to move forward and let's go. And honestly, this podcast is a part of that for me.
One of the most useful tools of the Enneagram is being able to recognize those different parts of ourselves, right? You identify your core type as a 5, but to understand how can you tap into some of that 9 energy when you need to, how can that help kind of smooth your edges or make you a better leader? I feel similarly with my line to 7. I am not naturally a very fun person. I don't like spontaneous fun. I am not the fun parent. And so I know that I have to kind of let down my strict rigidity a little bit more and embrace that 7, that playfulness of a 7. It helps that I work with college students, right? It's really fun to connect with them and I have a really good time and we can do fun things and have fun conversations. But it also helps me recognize who on my team can I lean into who does that naturally well. And this is both an Enneagram and a strengths construct where you recognize what you do best as a leader. And then you find people who complement you and who you can lean into and really empower them to do what they do best. And that's where you're going to get really healthy whole teams.
Yes. Yeah, it's funny because I have a line to seven as well. And I'm sure we've lost some folks that don't understand the Enneagram. It just means that, you know, it's, hey, there's a part of us that we don't naturally go to. And my business partner for 12 years was a seven, core type seven. And so he brought the fun. And in fact, for years, my nickname was No Fun Chris Lagarde, because I wasn't. I still am working on that. Spontaneity and foolishness just does not, that's hard for me. But I know that. And so I'm working on it, right? It's an awareness now that I can make a choice on stepping into that when it's appropriate. And so, you know, and that's that ego part, right? And in Enneagram speak, you know, self-awareness comes from knowing the difference between your ego and your essence. And I would define that as the ego is, it's not just, oh, you're an egotistical person. It refers to the patterns of thinking, feeling, and behaving that are shaped by past experiences and external influences. Kind of like the operating system of personality, if you will, versus the essence, which is a deeper, truer version of yourself that exists beneath that ego. The ego is kind of protecting that essence, and there's coping strategies and fixations and things that we do to protect that. And the essence is the core qualities and values that make you who you are. And according to the Enneagram, the goal really is to move beyond the ego and into that essence, which allows for greater authenticity, self-acceptance, growth, kind of like unlocking your true potential, if you will. And it's not necessarily to live in essence 100% of the time. There's parts of our ego that are good, that are decent. It's not all bad, but there's this back and forth and awareness of like, where am I living in and what am I leaning into? And is it the negative side of my ego, or do I need to lean into my essence and to be aware of that? Again, self-awareness as a leader, really, really important.
And so much of that also boils down to developing trust as a leader. Right? Because when you are aware of how your ego shows up, when you're aware of your essence, when you're aware of your identity, that's how you build relationships. Trust is built in small moments. And when you know how you best build trust, you're able to lean into that better. I know that I am a high relationship builder. And so I take a lot of one-on-one time with people. I really like to get to know who they are at their core. Other people who may be more, less relationship focused, but, you know, speaking in strengths language, right, more in the influencing or more into the strategic thinking, they're going to have different strategies on how they build trust with people. But as a leader, I think that that is the most fundamental component. And it starts also with having a true, genuine care for the people that you're leading. And when you know who you are and how you demonstrate that care, it's going to come to you a lot easier.
Heck yes. Like creating that safe space, right? When somebody knows they're safe, they're cared for, and you know, man, they can receive your leadership so much better, and they'll follow you to the ends of the earth, you know, and I think there's been tons of studies and things done on like, look, people don't leave jobs because of the money. They leave because of bad leaders. And so if you want to keep people in your organization, good people, talented people, then develop the... As far as I'm concerned, I think if you were to focus on one thing, it is your self-awareness. That's the one thing that beats everything else, is your self-awareness. So how do you develop that, right? And there's a reason we started this season by defining the problem, talking about surrender. I think part of developing your self-awareness is surrendering and say, I'm not perfect. I've got parts of me I need to work on. I need to be more aware to make better choices, right? And the Enneagram, there's plenty of personality assessments out there. We talked about some last time, and yet I think those bring some awareness, but there's something special about the Enneagram that allows you to find those patterns, find those false self, those negative, unhealthy things about you, and some of the strengths about your essence, and lean into those, develop those more, just be more aware. And again, I can't find a better tool. And we use, Adrian and I both use the Integrative Enneagram IEQ 9, which the pro version of that is 42, 43 pages. I could literally coach somebody for a decade on just that. I've had mine since 2018, 2019, and I recently redid it in the beginning of this year. And I still have not really moved beyond, I think, page probably 16 or 17 of those 40 some pages, because there's just so much there. And the awareness that it brings is it just is not rivaled from my perspective.
Agreed. It's so deep and so rich.
So, you know, anything you would add to developing your self-awareness?
Well, I'd like to bring it back to what our original episode and our original question has been about, which is the problem, the hurry, living as a leader in this really distracted, really hurried life, and starting to connect the dots with our identity, with our self-awareness, and this problem that seems to be very pervasive. And so really thinking about, as you go deep into your identity and deep into your self-awareness, how is that maybe manifesting with the problem? What is it about this culture of hurry and distraction and your hardwiring, your personality, who you are? What's the connection there? Because we're all going to be motivated a little bit differently. My reasons for hurrying are going to be different from yours, Chris, but the distraction is there. And in order to find solutions to how we're going to manage that problem, we really have to get clear on who we are.
And look, what we're really talking about is a spiritual journey. It's an inner journey, right? Spiritual, inner, kind of the same thing in this case. And you can't have that inner spiritual journey unless you take the exit ramp from that culture, from that distraction and hurry. You can't. You literally, it's impossible. So, which is why we've been talking about these things all leading to this. And so, you know, just imagine yourself as a leader of learning to surrender and accept what is and know the difference between what you can and can't control, can't, should or shouldn't change. You know, when you get into some of those practices where you've got space to think and consider in all of that that goes along with that, you know, you get to a point where you know your identity, you are very self-aware and you're working on that. That is a powerful leader. And so the you know, this is the next episode we're going to dive into, and the final like one where it's just you and I, Adrian, we're going to talk about this thing called a rule of life, which will take all of these things and help you put it into a format that will make it tangible and something you can actually take with you and do something with. So I'm excited to talk about that. But the challenge I want to give to everybody here is to go to our website and take the IEQ9. We'll have a link there that you'll be able to get a discount from us for that. But you go there, take it. It takes about, 30, 45 minutes at the most. And you're going to want to do it at a time when you are good. You're not distracted. Your brain's fresh. You've got energy. You're not tired. You're ready to go. And then I would really encourage you to, if you do that, let us know. And I would encourage you to sign up at least for one coaching session with us that walks you through the basics of it and helps you kind of give a flyover so that you're not just wondering what the heck is this 42-page report that I just did. But it gives you the basics. And we offer some other options up there. But the best way that you can get the most out of that is to work with someone like Adrian or I that walks you through the basics of it. But, you know, just go on there, take about 30 or 40 minutes at the most. And I promise you it'll be well worth it.
And I would say, don't overthink it when you're taking it. Be honest, but make sure that you are answering the questions, not as how you wish you were or how you think other people see you, but how you truly believe you show up.
Yeah, agreed. Well, thanks for joining us again, everybody. Thanks for going on this journey with us around self-awareness, and can't wait to wrap this season up in the next few episodes. Appreciate you being here, and don't forget to engage with us online, whether it's through the website or Instagram at The Overflowing Life. We'd love to hear from you, and what questions do you have, right? Send them to us. We're going to do a Q&R episode in the next few weeks, and I'm looking forward to doing that. So with that said, thanks for joining me again, Adrian. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Chris.
On our next episode, we featured the insights of Diane Ring, a seasoned executive coach with a specialized focus on self-awareness. Drawing from her extensive experience, Diane helps us unpack the nuances of this crucial topic, revealing its indispensable role in effective leadership. This is a conversation rich with wisdom and practical takeaways that you won't want to miss. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Overflowing Life. If our message struck a chord with you, please subscribe and connect with us. Share your thoughts, questions, and stories with us on Instagram at The Overflowing Life or visit TheOverflowingLife.com. And if you're looking for coaching that helps you create an overflowing life, please reach out to us. We'd love to partner with you. See you next week.